Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to interesting and inspiring women about their lives, their influences, and their mantras, which help us change our mindsets to face challenges in our own lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Louise Minchin. Hello and welcome, Louise.
Oh, it's lovely to see you, Nikki.
And you. Now, we're laughing already. I'm going to introduce you and then I'm going to tell people why we're laughing. So Louise is a journalist and news presenter, a well-known regular anchor on the BBC One Breakfast TV programme, and has covered sport from football to the Olympics. And Louise was also a radio production assistant on the Today programme and has been on The One Show and Radio 5 Live. I mean, incredible, but we are laughing because people can't see this at home and we're not allowed to share it. But Louise and I are both feeling sorry for her. We both have a crutch because she's done her foot in and I've done my hip in. And we have this brilliant photo that we're going to put on Twitter of us with our crutches talking to each other in our own home. I mean, how fantastic is that?
Honestly, you couldn't make it up, could you, Nikki? Because I know you asked me a while ago if I could come on your podcast, which I'm delighted to do, by the way. And thank you very much. And I feel quite intimidated by the title of it. So I thought, well, when would be a good time? And so we're both sitting, I'm sitting on the sofa, you in your bed, aren't you? Because we've both had operations and we're both in recovery. So mine is from it sounds totally ridiculous, this, an injury that I did actually about a year and a half ago. I was training for an extreme triathlon called Norseman, and literally it was in the last run up, the last 6 weeks of training, and I ran up Snowdon, as you could in those days, pre-corona, and down Snowdon. That had gone really well. Turned off my watch because in my world, my crazy world that I live in, if it's not on the watch, it doesn't count. So I turned off the watch and literally at that moment turned my ankle on the pavement, and it was excruciatingly painful. But being a kind of determined soul, as you'll probably understand, I basically just took some ibuprofen. I had a party 3 days later, which was my own party that I really wanted to go to. I was like, well, I'm not going to go to my own party.
It's your birthday, and
it's my 50th. I packed it with ice, you know, took some ibuprofen. It was extremely painful, ignored it, and then stopped running ahead of the extreme triathlon because it was really painful. I thought, well, I can't do much training now anyway, so I'll just stop running. So I stopped running, did the extreme triathlon, which we can talk about if you want later, but ends on with a marathon. And then, yeah, so that was about a year and a half ago. Since then, I've done another three marathons. And eventually I'm like, right, okay, this is, you know, my foot really does hurt. I think I'll go and check it out. And I checked it out and I should have done this. This is not, you know, it's really silly. And on that day, I had in fact broken a bone in my ankle and snapped my ligament.
And still did all that running and everything else. Oh, my word. And you're laughing and we're both laughing, but I don't know why we're not crying.
I'm laughing. It may be the painkillers. You know, he took an X-ray and an MRI. And I mean, I knew it, well, at the time it was obviously painful, but I'd had no idea that I really had done so much damage. So I've now had it operated on and sitting like you for the next 2 weeks.
I'm sorry we're not on the same sofa, actually. I wish we were actually having our siestas, because I've had, for our listeners, a hip replacement, would you believe? And it's my second operation in pandemic. I had my appendix out as an emergency in July. So I'm having a bit of a time. So actually, I think we're very lucky to have had these operations mid this incredible.
Well, we are because, you know, just even getting access to healthcare can, you know, is a huge thing at the moment. So I feel, yeah, very lucky. And there's not, you know, it's not like we can go out anyway. But also I feel, you know, it gives you a very, very stark perspective on how incredibly lucky I am to lead the life that I do, to do all the crazy adventures that I do. And actually, you know, this is a kind of stark reminder.
It definitely is. I've felt the same. And in fact, for disabled people, you know, people with disabilities, Paralympians, I've got massive respect because I've just got a zone. I can't do high and I can't do low. I can just do middle zone. And it's so frustrating. And you can't stand on your foot and I can't walk with my legs. So we're a right old pair. Yeah. So we're inspiring womankind that we can still work and talk and make people happy. And that's what we're trying to do. So that's just fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, it must be hard for you because I've been reading up only a few days ago, Sally Nugent stood in, which she's done before, hasn't she, when you went to Norway. And she's already got heavily criticised for her interview style on coronavirus and for small talk. And I think you've got big shoes to fill because Twitter, Johnny Vegas was winding her up about her on the sofa. So your big shoes are missed and everyone wants to know what you're doing. And I think that must be quite invasive because actually it's your business what you're doing. And you know, you could have been operating tattooed on any part of your body, and why do you need to share that?
I mean, it's going to be obvious when I go back that I've obviously had an operation, but you're right, I didn't know how the operation was going to go. I think, you know, I don't think it's that interesting to anybody else. I mean, it's, you know, people go through much worse things, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it said this morning, your absence has been unexplained. And I just thought, well, honestly, they've been grilling Dan Walker, so you can be jubilant about that. and do they need to know? But there you are. I think they're either missing you or their routine because of lockdown particularly. And obviously they're concerned now that Eamon and Ruth have been replaced by Alison Hammond and Dermot O'Leary. They want your familiarity and lovely face even more.
There is something about the BBC Breakfast family, isn't it? And I do feel very much part of a whole massive family. And it's not just because we're on at a certain time of day, aren't we? And people invite us into their houses at, you know, when they're at kind of quite a, it's a really kind of family time, isn't it? Breakfast, you know, you're making your toast, you're making your tea, you're having conversation. I mean, half the time, I don't think people are watching us, which is fine, by the way. We're kind of like in the background, aren't we? But we're an accepted part of family routine. And I just genuinely feel very much part of that whole family. And we're a family within, you know, like Sally feels like my sister, you know, the Breakfast family, the presenters are a family, and then a whole wider community. And it's actually wonderful to be part of that. And I feel, you know, I feel kind of blessed by that, actually. I really do. And it's lovely because people recognise me in all sorts of extraordinary places.
Exactly. Well, you've got two personas, haven't you? You've got the...
Well, I think I do, but in fact, I don't. That's the thing. I think there's Louise on the telly, who's really, you know, well put together and slightly less well put together now we have no makeup artists anymore. And then I think there's Louise, who's like doing, you know, doing the exercise and being a mum. And I kind of think that there's a division, but actually, of course, there's not. Of course, I am the same person. And of course, wherever I am, yes, whether it's in the supermarket or getting out of a pool, I am me. And it's nice. People are normally really nice.
You've got a lot of admirers as well. I was researching this morning and they're talking about your short skirts and those lovely legs of yours. So they're going to be looking at me more. You've got a lot of followers and men that like getting up at 6 a.m. to see you. How does your husband feel about this?
Does he not care?
I think you've got the unique blend, and I hope you're not offended by this, but I wrote this morning that I think men admire your sporting prowess and, you know, what you're capable of, and particularly when you've broken your foot and you can still run marathons. And women want to be more like you with the health, fitness and your career and everything. So I think you're a bit of a female version of James Bond, I've decided.
Well, I'm happy with that. I mean, I'm happy with, particularly, I think, on, you know, what I've tried to do the last kind of by mistake, but also now much more on purpose over the last few years, is that I embraced sport really, really late in my life. I loved sport, don't get me wrong. I really loved it, but I've done it in a way that has come as a kind of big surprise to me. And if I can just pass on to anybody, whether, you know, whatever age they are, whatever background they come from, that, you know, sport, exercise can make you feel like a really different person, both physically and also mentally as well. It's really important to me. And if I can, you know, do silly, crazy things and people think, right, okay, I'm going to go and do a run because I saw Louise do that jump off a ferry in the dark or something. I just think if I can pass it on in any way, because I feel like it's a gift that I've been given, yeah, that's brilliant.
Oh, it definitely. I mean, I was watching your Norway and I thought, I don't think I'd be inspired to jump off that bridge with my crash helmet on like you. But just to brave that in those freezing waters, people have taken up wild swimming and things like that, haven't they?
I mean, wild swimming's been, it has absolutely taken off, hasn't it? And that's actually one of the favourite things.
Yeah, I've swum in the sea because I've had to, because you just can't bear not swimming, can you? You know, I love swimming like you do. But the other day you beat your fellow journalist anchor, Dan Walker, at the AccuRage Challenge with Pudsey, didn't you? And I think he's certainly in credit to be your T-boy for even longer now. And people love that human touch, don't they?
Really? So I love working with Dan as well because I've got a younger brother who I'm very, very fond of. And I guess that's kind of sort of would explain quite a lot about our relationship. And with that skipping challenge, I mean, you know, so we had to do as many skips as we could, or in whatever minutes. Anyway, I think we had to get to 100 or something.
I think they added your ages together, but we won't mention that.
Added our ages together and we had to do that many skips. And it was whoever skipped who was the fastest. And I know, because I know Dan really well, and I know a little bit about kind of, you know, the psychology. And I knew that he would just try and go really, really fast and that he was likely to mess it up. And I just knew if I just went really slow and steady, this is the way, you know, I approach marathons. I don't run them fast. Oh. I just keep going.
But that's the answer to the winning, isn't it?
It's the tortoise and the hare, and I won.
Brilliant. For womankind, again, we're proud. So I saw in Hello Magazine, and I can see here your beautiful, stunning home. It's been referred to as a palace, you know, and you know, that enviable red catsuit that I saw you in Hello Magazine. That looks amazing. And now, is that where you've been in lockdown, in Chester?
So basically, when BBC Breakfast moved up to Media City in Salford, what, I think it's 8 years ago, in last April, and I lived in London until that point. And yeah, we moved up, the whole family moved up to Cheshire. And it was a big change, obviously, but a good change. I think sometimes change can be, you know, push you into places that you didn't think that you'd be. And it's been an amazing change. I mean, I wouldn't do all the half the sporting things I did. I just wouldn't have done that. Mm. So it's been brilliant. And I feel very lucky that we're close to the countryside as well. So
you're an enviable sportswoman, a triathlete, and competed in a lot of events. I mean, numerous triathlons. And it only started as a cycling challenge, didn't it, with your work?
Yeah, so I like the way you say you stumbled upon, because it really was that. And I think that one of the learnings from what I've done over the last few years is to say yes to stuff, is to go and do stuff that is challenging and a little bit scary. So when Breakfast moved up to Salford, it was 2012, and coming up to the Christmas of 2012, one of my lovely producers on the program said, oh, we really need to do our Breakfast Christmas challenge, because they've done some brilliant challenges. They've done, I don't know, Bake Off, the breakfast version of Bake Off, and various different things over the years, and I'd never been involved. And she said to me, we're looking for ideas. What ideas have you got? And that's what I love about Breakfast, is you give them an idea and they grow it into something amazing. I said, well, why don't we try and do something that's inspired by the Olympics? Because, of course, we've all been watching the Olympics. It's been an amazing summer of sport. And she said, okay, let me go away and think about it. Anyway, she went away and she thought about it. She came back. She goes, right, we're going to do a bike race. We're going to go to the velodrome in Manchester. You are going to race on the racing bikes around the velodrome. And it's going to be in front of 4,000 people. I just looked at her and I was like, okay, so I've never been to a velodrome. I've never sat on a racing bike. And you're going to make us do this live in front of 4,000 people? Okay, I'm in. Anyway, so we went for an hour's practice, and it was we had teams. I was on the team with Charlie State, and Bill Turnbull and Susanna Reid were on the other team. And what they were going to do was add our times together, and the team with the fastest time would win the sort of BBC Breakfast homemade gold medal. And we went, and literally I sat on that bike for the first hour. Really steep for starters. I mean, you can slide down it on your bottom, which I did. Yeah. So it's as steep as a slide, and the bikes are very, well, they're really skinny for starters, and they've got no brakes and no gears. So when you start pedaling, if you stop pedaling, the bike's still moving, your feet still go around because they're clipped in as well, your feet.
Yeah.
So it's really very, very scary, actually. The first time I went around, I just screamed the whole way around. Second time I went around, I was like, quite like this. Yeah, laughing. And the third time I went around, I was like, oh, I really like this. On that day, so Bill Turnbull, I heard him say, well, the producers told me, I can't be beaten by a girl. I was like, right, let's see what we can do about that. Anyway, so really brief, I'll try and do this briefly. So Charlie absolutely smashed it. I mean, he went so fast. I've spoken to him afterwards. He said he thought he was going to die. Literally, his heart was going so fast. Bill did a really good time. Susanna kind of sailed around. You know, Susanna's so graceful and elegant. She was terrified. She'd cried the whole way through the rehearsals. And I don't blame her. And she sort of gracefully sort of sailed over the finishing line. So all I had to do to win was pretty much not fall off my bike. And Charlie and I would have won because he had such a good time. And I just remember letting go. And it's the moment that changed my life. So I was holding onto the pole at the side, and I let go. And in my head, I was like, okay, there's a decision here. Either you just go around safely and we win anyway, or you absolutely smash it. And not only do you win, you beat Bill. So guess what I did? I beat him by like something like 0.02 of a second. I mean, it was so close, so close. Honestly, I went over that finishing line. I was like, wow, this is utterly amazing. And it just reminded me, you know, that I'd given up competitive sport when I was 15. I had been a good swimmer. And I'd just given it all up because I didn't like the way I looked, because I didn't like my muscles. And I just went over that finishing line. I was like, oh my gosh, why have I given up sport? I need to get back in the game. Wow. So I bought myself a racing bike like the next day.
And you took up triathlon. I mean, that's a massive thing. And then you wrote a book, Dare to Try, with a play on words to encourage people to get in. Now, swimming, running and biking, I mean, they're phenomenal distances, aren't they? And straight after each other.
Yeah, so I started with much shorter distance. So there's various different kind of lengths of the triathlon, and basically there's something called a sprint triathlon, which is where I started, which is like a 750-meter swim outside in a river. And then I think it was a 25-kilometer bike ride and a 5K run. And at that stage, genuinely, I had a foot injury way back then, even then, actually, because I'd hurt my foot a long, long time ago, a different injury, but probably, and they're probably all related. Back then, I mean, 5K was a really long way for me to run. And I just remember doing that 5K and just being absolutely exhausted. My family were there. My daughter, Scarlett, was running, going, "Mommy, you can do this." Just like, I really don't think I can. And every time they couldn't see me, I'd walk. Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's terrible at all. I think it's a massive thing that you're putting yourself through, particularly with your foot. But you did that, and then you went way beyond that. You competed in the standard distance event at the World Triathlon Championships in Chicago 5 years ago. And, you know, beyond that, qualified for the team at the Dambuster Triathlon at Rutland Water and the ITU World Triathlon Championships. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. I did my first one and loved it. Had a panic attack in the river. I thought I was a super confident swimmer because I realized later that what it was. It wasn't the cold. It was the fact that I couldn't see my hand. And, you know, you're used to swimming. Most people are used to swimming until this summer, until wild swimming became such a thing. We're used to swimming in swimming pools, aren't we? Where, of course, you can see everything beautifully, can't you, in clear water. So it was the fact I was really disorientated by not being able to see where my hand was, let alone anything else. And then somebody told me after that that I used to see these people in these tri-suits with GBR, you know, Brown or whatever their name was on the back. I was like, where have they got those from? And you actually can qualify in your age group to compete in triathlon. So I set myself the sort of monumental challenge, it feels like now, to do that. And I had a lot of work to do. I really, really did, particularly on my running, actually. But did qualify and went to the first world championships. I went to was in Chicago, and it was just
amazing.
Really amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Putting me to shame sitting in my bed here. So it must make you full of endorphins, or is it absolutely exhausting?
Yeah. I think it's been, I went from sprint distance to standard distance, which was double. So about 40K bike and then a 10K run. And now I do. I don't know what I'm going to do, Nikki. We'll have to see when and if this fixes. I moved into what are called extreme triathlons, and they're extreme because they're in extreme environments. And normally you go from one place to another. And they're what you call Ironman distance. So the swim is 3.8 kilometers. So that's about 2 mile swim. And then 180K bike. So that's about 100 mile bike. And then a marathon. And I've done two of those. I've done one in Patagonia and then one in Norway. And they just, I mean, you know, and they took me, I think, about 16 and a half hours each.
It's not for the, you know, unadventurous, is it? I mean, that's massive. It's really lit the touch paper with something, hasn't it, with you? It's amazing.
Yeah. And that is an amazing, I mean, you know, for me, it's so much about being a small, little, tiny, tiny part of our incredible environment that we live in.
Amazing.
For me, it's about being, those race days are incredible. They are obviously really grueling. There's, you know, really kind of dark moments that I have, but actually it, you know, the memories that they build in me, they kind of sear onto my brain in a really powerful way. And actually Norseman, for example, I should have missed Norseman really because I'd hurt my foot, but I didn't. And actually that those memories of that day kind of get me through, you know. This last few months have been quite tough, haven't they? And they, you know, memories are very powerful. And the memory of, you know, being in that cold water and coming around the corner in this fjord and seeing the fire on the beach, you know, those are very important to me.
Yes.
So those are all memories that are important. Then other things, you know, for example, I mean, those races are crazy because I wake up for literally after Patagon Man, the one in Patagonia, I'd wake up for two months and go, am I buzzing? Yep, I'm still buzzing.
Really?
2 months.
Well, that is a massive high, isn't it? And actually, you know, having that steely resilience and determination to push through that must be pain levels and, you know, actually probably helped in lockdown in terms of actually that knowing that there is an end in sight.
Yeah, but also this is a marathon, isn't it? It's not a sprint. We need to take, or, you know, every day is, you know, every it's like a day at a time. But also the other thing I learned from all of that as well is that it's not just the race day that I love, because even if I hadn't, let's say, for example, I hadn't been able to do that race, there are so many great moments that I've had in the training. Do you see what I mean? Like there's a brilliant thing that I've got a lovely friend who I run with from here in Cheshire, and we've done some mad crazy runs in mountains and stuff, and in the cold and the freezing wet. But you know, the training as well is very much part of building, you're right, building resilience, building blocks to which you can rely on actually in different times.
Amazing and so inspiring, and so inspiring, you know, for young, you know, for all ages of women.
You can do stuff, that's the thing.
When I've got my new leg, I'll be
with your new hip,
my new bionic leg, there'll be no stopping us, will I? I think we need to do a podcast just on this.
You can do it at any age, at any ability. And the other thing is, people think, oh, you know, like, Louise, you're so competitive. I'm not competitive, actually. I just really love it. I really love it. And I don't need to beat anybody else, or I'd much rather, you know, run with someone, or, you know, be part of kind of, you know, do stuff together. I mean, those are my favourite kind of runs now, actually, the ones I'm doing with people.
Rather than competitive, isn't it? You're just dedicated.
Yeah, dedicated, that's true. And it's part of my lifestyle.
So, as a fellow podcast host and producer, you have one called Her Spirit to uplift women, yes, with your fellow BBC triathlon presenter, Annie Emerson. Yes. So, tell us about that.
So, that started, it started just before lockdown. And actually, we'd done a podcast last year, which was called, I like to have a little bit of playing with names, it's called The Tripod, again, TRI. I mean, why did that, nobody ever have a podcast called The Tripod already?
Fantastic.
And what we did with that podcast was we got three people. Joe Wiley was one of them, Radio 1 DJ, Bowel Babe Deborah James, who you know is a broadcaster.
I've been interviewing her for ages, yes, about Bowel.
Oh, she's brilliant. And then another young lad called Lloyd. And we basically took them from never having done a triathlon to doing a triathlon at the end of the podcast. So we did a podcast together, and that was really fun and went really well. And they all did their triathlons, and it was great. And then we just thought, actually, how can we take a bit of what we did there and get it, you know, out to a different audience? And so Her Spirit is, it's just really all about well-being, health, and exercise. And we talked to all sorts of people, like, I'm trying to think who we talked to.
Lovely one with Bryony Gordon, actually, this morning. Yeah. That was so lovely. She was so honest and self-deprecating, wasn't she, in her battle with, you know, alcohol and things like that, were really inspiring.
Yeah, we talked to lots of different types of people from all different backgrounds. So you mentioned Bryony Gordon. We had Stacey Copeland, who's a boxer. We've had Dame Kelly Holmes, who was just really incredibly honest about all sorts of things that she'd been through. And we just talked about, you know, what exercise means to them, how they stay both kind of physically and mentally well. And actually, it's been amazing, because we started before lockdown. Literally, I think the first one we did was in March, and we sort of thought it would be monthly. And then we thought, well, actually, you know, we thought we'd have to be in a studio. As you can tell, you're sitting in your bed. I'm on my sofa. You don't need to be in a studio. This is your studio, wherever you are, isn't it? And we realised quite quickly we didn't need to be in a studio. We could do it from our respective homes. And we've done one a week. And it's been... Annie and I are very good friends, and we're very similar. We're also very different in our approaches to lots of different things. But and it's been wonderful. So every week I have a little chat with Annie and somebody else,
which is great, isn't it? And it doesn't seem like work, does it? It doesn't seem like work when we're chatting now. It's great. And I mean, it came about with Melanie and Holly, the Nottingham community, looking for happier selves. And I love the coaching team idea to inspire women to live healthier, happier lives. And the fact that you mentioned women of all sizes, you know, that are always dieting, always anxious, can be inspired in sport and business, and particularly for the diet industry that is really failing women, as they allude to on their website. People lose their mojo. Young women are in fear of judgment, of poor body image, of low self-esteem. It's very damaging. You've got daughters. I've got a daughter. You know, that body shaming, the healthier habits have to come, particularly out of lockdown now, don't they, in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, I feel really, you know, not conflicted, but, you know, I gave up sport when I was that absolute classic that, you know, that all the research, or a lot of research says is, you know, young girls give up sport when they hit puberty. And I gave up sport when I was 15 because, again, body image. And I didn't like the way I looked. I thought I was too muscly. And what I've learned, and hopefully we talk about, is that, you know, it's not, you know, hopefully it's not about the way you look. It's about how you feel. And for me, feeling strong is the most important thing.
Definitely, it's wellness. And, you know, definitely, and we're in parallel advertising wellness with our legs up and our crutches. But but you're on a mission to support 1 million women, change their lives by 2022, which isn't that far away. And I've put exactly what you've just said. It's about how we feel and not how we look. And my health and well-being, you know, curve has actually, you know, I've done much more of that in lockdown than ever before. And I think people need that more. And I've interviewed, you know, trauma counsellors and Buddhist mindfulness coaches and things rather than business women so much in lockdown. Things that people are needing, crutches, using the joke crutches, things to actually rely on to get them through their next day, yeah. their day, the present moment, their lives, isn't it? Yeah. Because it's tough. It is, has been.
You know, because I talk a lot, we talk a lot about it on the podcast. And, you know, that's what I feel very passionately about is being outside. You know, for me, being outside. And for example, they go back to the wild swimming, you know, that feeling of being immersed in cold water is just really exhilarating, really important. And, you know, just to flip things around a bit, you know, right now, I went out of the house yesterday and I walked 20 meters and I literally just stood there and kind of breathed in outsideness.
No, I'm missing the outside air actually, because I had, you know, I'm a swimmer, you know, not a swimmer of your category, but I was a regular 3 or 4 times a week swimmer. And in lockdown, I had to become a daily walker, which actually I started to enjoy and embrace the open air, and I miss it, you know, because we can't walk anywhere. We can't go anywhere with our stupid feet. But I was standing gasping the front air by the front door just now. So it is important. It's definitely important. And
I think for me, the thing is, if you can, like I have done and hopefully will continue, build, you know, exercise as being part of your lifestyle. That's just what you do. Like every single day, you know, I go and do it, whether it's a bit of yoga or a walk. And that's, I think that's the important thing, is because people always say, how do you stick to it? If you change your lifestyle, then it's not sticking to it, is it? Part of what you do.
Every day for 30 days, it becomes a habit. And I think actually in lockdown, it's more acceptable to say to people, I'm going for my meditation or my Pilates or my walk now, because everyone needs to. You know, Russell Brand is an advocate of all that too, isn't he? Now, congratulations for your podcast. It's a huge success. You've topped 100,000 downloads. Woo! Which is huge.
You know, it's so funny, isn't it? Because when we did the podcast, I thought, you know, 10,000 downloads was my goal. And then we've gone through 100,000. Thank you very much to everybody who's listening. And thank you very much for having me on your podcast. It's become, you know, again, by putting it out every week, it's become a bit of a, you know, genuinely there have people who've been in touch who are just like, oh, I really look forward to this every week. It becomes, again, part of their habit, part of their chat. You know, they think that they're in that, wherever we are, Annie and myself, she's always in a different room in her house, actually. It's just company, isn't it?
But I think women love that connectivity, isn't it? And that energy. And actually it makes them feel as though they're all in the same room having a chat. Like we are, you know, it humanizes it. No, I think that's doing brilliantly. And
we can do that. That's been encouraging, hasn't it? That we can do that, even though we're physically separated from each other. You can communicate and you can be in touch.
Probably I can talk to you more than I potentially would have been able to had you been really busy and, you know, in Salford all the time and everything. So fantastic.
We've had that on breakfast as well. You know, we've got lots of like superstars on, you know, not on the sofa, but from their kitchens. It's been lovely.
Stop fibbing. You're not doing anything really. So can you talk to me, please? So you're being a great role model for women, and it's amazing. And we're not too far behind you. We've been going a bit longer. We're not anywhere near as famous as you, but we've got 80,000 downloads, so we're quite excited. So it's lovely to know we've all had that many little ears listening to us for that intimate experience, isn't it? The Influential Women podcast helps others with adversity to get through the tough stuff. And I just wondered if there's any particular personal or life adversity you've thrived and survived from to help others have the tools as a sort of survival guide to get inspired by.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to talk about really is it's about menopause. So I'm 52, and people who may have watched me on BBC Breakfast will know that we did do a huge menopause week, actually, it turned out to be, because I mean, I had no idea how. I knew it was affecting me, but I didn't know, kind of, there was so much about it that I didn't know. But what happened was, again, back to my amazing producers, because every time we did a story about menopause, it literally went ballistic. The audience went ballistic. There was so much thirst for information. And to cut a very long story short, I was on HRT for for various reasons, had to come off the particular HRT that I was on. And my producer said, right, we're going to do a menopause week and we need you to talk about it because that's going to make the difference. And at that point, you're like, oh, you know, I haven't told anybody on the telly I'm off with an operation. I'm not really, oh, things are personal, aren't they? And I thought about it and I was like, okay, you know, I took a big deep breath and I was like, okay, I'm going to talk about it. And at the time when I did the film, I was not on HRT. And it's really interesting looking back at the film now because I could never do this. I'm back on HRT and, you know, I know it's not for everybody, but for me, it makes a massive difference to so many things. I could not make that film now because I was in a very vulnerable position because it used to make me feel, and I say used to because I don't feel this way anymore, you know, really anxious, really unsure of myself. You know, I used to forget words. I used to forget things. I used to be like, when I was on the telly, it seemed like the red light would go on and my brain would be able to focus, but I come off the telly and I wouldn't be able to focus. I was much more, you know, I'm a really glass half full person. I became a glass half empty person. I ended up actually having to have my heart looked at because I was having heart palpitations. I mean, so much, you know, talked about hot sweats, night sweats, like I was, you know, every night it was like I'd run a marathon, which I hadn't, in a jungle. So much going on. Anyway, so I did that film and it kind of opened the floodgates and everybody, I think because I was able to at that point, and I don't think I can really communicate it in the same way now, so many people were able to identify with it, go, oh my gosh, that's how I feel. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin.
Definitely. No, and I saw some of the footage that you said. I mean, you'd spoken out about it. You revealed how you suffered hot flushes on BBC Breakfast that led to them lowering the temperature because those hot lights in the studios, which was very understanding and gracious, wasn't it? And I know, you know, you were called out for forgetting things on air, which, you know, is all part of it, you know, to...
Yeah, really. And I've spoken to people subsequently, and I still speak to people all the time because once you've opened your heart about it, you know, like lots of my friends phone me up going, please, can you talk to me because this, and you know, I've got people coming up to me going, I'm going to leave my job, and like, please do just go and talk to a doctor, go and get some help, give it 3 months.
It is quite scary. I mean, you know, a little bit older than you and out the other side of mine, and actually I had heart palpitations and I related it to caffeine and I haven't had caffeine since, and actually by having decaffeinated tea and no coffee they went, but it's things that you have to work out for yourself. And actually that's what's so challenging, because I went through an anxiety thing and vitamins helped with that, and it's some of the vitamins that actually were lacking in my diet that the hormones then made up for, but no one tells you any of this and you have to sort of stumble around it yourself. And I totally get where you're coming from, and so many women are struggling. There's so many different symptoms and body ache.
That was another thing. So you're aching, you know, aching bones. Well, guess what, I thought I had aching bones because I was trying to run marathons, and now I got broken bones, but not achy bones.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got broken bones and thought it was that. But it's not always that, is it? It's not always straightforward. So hopefully this will help a lot of women.
The other thing is, so what I get my friends to do, and I recommend to anybody, is there's 34 different symptoms. So go and, you know, print yourself out the symptoms, see how many you've got, because there'll be symptoms that you may be suffering that you have absolutely no idea.
Exactly.
Might need to do with the menopause and you might not have to have them anymore.
No, you're so right. And I think, and actually some women can start even in their 30s, you know, and particularly early 40s, so it doesn't have to be 40s, 50s. So I think that will help a lot of people, and you know, get checked out. So which strong women have inspired you in your life?
Oh gosh, which strong women? I think I'm inspired by, and this sounds probably really cliched, being part of a sisterhood, is people who back you up, that, you know, I hopefully try and back other people up as well. Do you see what I mean? I think together we're really powerful, and that's good. And we need sometimes, you know, we do need to help each other and stand up for each other. And I think that's for me is the most useful thing, actually, is that we can do probably together. Probably just to support each other.
I think female collective networks where we've got each other's back, it really, but even more so, I think, in this lockdown. So can we talk about your passions? So I just want to mention that we love collaborating on health and wellbeing with guests and businesses who share our values. And if any brands and media companies want to get involved, please contact me at nikkibannermanradio.co.uk. So hobbies, I mean, as if you'd have any time, you must be running and jumping and cycling everywhere, are you? Have you got any other passions?
I was really, again, this is, you know, if you've got mantras, mine would be say yes to stuff which you think is really scary. A while ago, I got asked to go on MasterChef, and my family will tell you that pre-MasterChef, my idea of supper was, is there any hummus and some carrots?
Perfect. We definitely need to sit on the sofa together more often.
So, I mean, when I told my friends that I was going on MasterChef, they're like, are you literally nuts? Because I had no, I mean, I could cook, but I had no interest whatsoever in cooking. As far as I'm concerned, it was just like, yeah, exactly. You know, eat something before you go out for a run, eat something when you come back. Let's not worry too much about it. Anyway, I went on MasterChef and it changed my life. And it sounds really sort of naff, but it genuinely did.
And did you find that scary? You don't find running, jumping in a freezing river scary, but you find baking scary?
Only because I didn't know much about it. So I didn't have much time to practice because I was also working on breakfast at the same time. So I'd be literally on the train working out what I was going to do for my next recipe by looking through YouTube and like looking at how to cook a paella for 2 hours on the train, but and never having the time to practice.
Because what time do you get up to do breakfast?
3:40.
No. And what time do you go to bed?
I go to bed about 9:30. It's a bit late. I do have a sleep in the afternoon. So that really, particularly through lockdown, actually, because obviously we've all had a little bit more time on our hands, haven't we? I've done loads of cooking.
Did you make banana bread? I did make some, actually.
Didn't make banana bread, but I did make sourdough. Oh yeah. Ooh. Went through that sourdough thing. Yeah. But no, I loved it. And that genuinely, you know, as I say, it was scary to do, but I really enjoyed it. And yeah, that's changed my life, and I cook in a completely different way now.
And changed your family's life as well, I should think. Now, you're passionate about children and you're a mum yourself. And I think you're still involved with various children's charities.
I do various things. I mean, I did this year I went to Namibia with Sport Relief to raise money for Sport Relief. And then I did that. You mentioned I did a big bike. I did a mad bike ride, 100-mile bike ride inside at the beginning of lockdown to raise money for children in need and Comic Relief, actually. So I'm those are the ones I'm most involved with at the moment. Are the kind of BBC ones.
And SOS Children's Villages, you've helped for orphaned and abandoned children around the world in 80 days. And supporter of charity Missing People. Have any of these been personal reason behind any of these?
No, Missing People we did, and I haven't been in touch with them in a while, actually, but I know they do amazing work. We did a programme actually way back called Missing Live on BBC One, where we did try and go and find people who'd gone missing. We did through the program. I can't remember there was a handful who were found because people on the so that's lovely.
Really, heartbreaking. You just can't imagine what people would have to deal with. Gosh, how amazing that you found them. So lastly, what wisdom would you say to uplift or influence women or men listening out there? Men love listening to, and probably even more so now that you're on here.
What would I say to people? I think you're much stronger than you think you are. You can do things that you think are impossible. But my point of advice would be to say yes to what you think is impossible. And that the Norseman triathlon that I did, I think their sort of tagline is, this is not for you. Really? And I'm a great, you know, throughout my whole life, when people have told me, you can't do this, you're not good enough, you're not strong enough, you're not X, Y, Z enough. You know, those are the things that are really worth trying, in my view. You know, not getting to your goal is not failing. It's not trying, which is, I think you need to try. So dare to try.
And dare to try. Good link back. Oh, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to talk to you. I feel so uplifted that we're both suffering in the same way. And it's been really lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much to you, Louise, for your time and sharing your incredible life as a broadcaster and journalist to uplift and inspire other women and men into sport and health. So thank you, Louise. I hope your foot's better soon. The Influential Women's Podcast is co-founded and host-presented by exec producer Nikki Bannerman and award-winning Juliet Nichols, audio produced by Safran Mirza and video produced by Katie Lewis. Please subscribe free on all podcasting platforms to hear our real-life stories out every other Tuesday.